You're listening to Discovering Multifamily, where we discuss all educational topics in commercial real estate with an emphasis on multifamily apartment investing via syndication. And now, your hosts, former NFL fullback Brian Leonard and Anthony Scandariato.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Discovering Multifamily podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Scandariato, and today we have a very special guest with us. Jonathan Fishman, who is the founder of BusyDev. Did I say that right, John?
Yep, correct.
Awesome. And BusyDev is a New York City-based business development group that works with tech, product, and service companies to help them grow their business and achieve revenue milestones. So as it relates to real estate, some of the ways that John helps create value for his clients and partners is through new introductions, partnerships, as it relates to, you know, capital connections and different marketing strategies that, you know, myself as a multifamily syndicator and an operator and a lot of our listeners can utilize. And John has had a lot of experience in the real estate industry. He was a managing partner at Weaver Street Partners and also a principal at Thor Equities and Stonehenge Partners. So he has over $1 billion in transactional experience, and it would be great to understand his state on the current market, specifically as it relates to multifamily and what he's up to now, kind of pivoting a little bit from the traditional transactional side, and definitely looking forward to the conversation, John.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and I think you captured the story very well, so just looking forward to the conversation.
Great. Well, can you start off by just explaining to our listeners your background in commercial real estate and how it relates to what you're doing now?
Sure. So I grew up in the in Westchester, just outside of New York City. Went to school at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. Graduated there 2001, and like a lot of my friends that were finishing school, decided that New York City was really the best place to kind of start my career. And when I looked at my paths between finance and real estate, I just felt like real estate seemed to be a little bit easier to access and penetrate, and went full speed ahead to find a job in the real estate business. Unfortunately, 2001, I was living in the city 9/11/01. All the momentum that I had during that summer kind of, you know, fell apart, and ended up landing my first job in real estate in the end of 2001, beginning of 2002, working for the largest commercial real estate brokerage company in the city called Insignia ESG. Spent about a year there in the research department, really a very humbling experience. I feel like I started, in the real, data. It was really the data side of the company, which at the time was before property technology really existed the way it does today, and realized I had no foundation in understanding the investment side of the business, which is where I wanted to be. Went back to NYU 03, 04, and then was fortunate enough in 2004 to link up with a company called Stonehenge Partners, which owns maybe six or seven multifamily properties in Manhattan. They had one institutional investment partner from Canada. And I kind of said, listen, I'm finishing school this semester. This was November of 2004. But I'm willing to come here 5 days a week, and whatever you need from me, I will, you know, I'm happy to learn and be a part of the team. My first week on the job, we were in the process of buying a $240 million acquisition right near Penn Station. So, to say the least, I was thrown into the fire, thrown into the mix. The learning curve was, you know, not even steep, wouldn't even do it justice. And everything from the process of, like, you know, the underwriting process to due diligence to helping write business plans to speaking to investors, all of that was happening live, real time, fast. There was no, I could ask questions, but I had to, like, really discover real estate through a transaction. I ended up spending 9 years at Stonehenge. The company grew to be one of the dominant Manhattan multifamily value add owner operators. And then I left there 2013 to really do stuff that was more entrepreneurial. where instead of just working for a company, I could kind of help create, have a vision and then go about creating it. So I went over to Thor Equities and started the multifamily group there with a colleague of mine in 2013 and had a nice run 3-4 years and got to a point where, you know, was always like listening to other opportunities that were out there, and something crossed our desk and created a company called Weaver Street Partners between 17 and 18, which, as you could imagine, were tough years to make sense of multifamily in New York City. So that was my 14-15 year run in the New York City real estate business, and kind of got me to where I am today, where I still look at real estate opportunities. Value add is really my expertise, but the company I created called BusyDev is really a business development company where we understand the real estate mindset, both the investor, developer, operator. And our goal is to kind of see, identify trends in whether it be a technology, a product or service, things that may not be apparent or mainstream to the groups that are operating in different markets. A lot of our clients service real estate. And so our job is to kind of figure out where those best matches lay. We could get it more into it later in the conversation, but that's kind of the 15 years in 5 minutes.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. And definitely broad experience for our listeners here. So kind of getting back to, you know, your 15 years plus of experience in more of, I guess, capital markets and operations and asset management, acquisitions, development. It looks like you did the whole traditional real estate path and are still, obviously, if opportunities come up. And like you said, it's very hard, especially in the New York City, New York City specifically, to make sense of multifamily deals. Now we're recording this during COVID and maybe that'll change post-COVID. But either way, the fundamentals in New York City, as you well know, have been more and more challenging. So I'd love to hear, I guess, you know, a little bit more on your decision, and I'm sure our listeners would want to hear, I guess, was that the main reason why you kind of pivoted away towards from the traditional path in order to, you know, almost have like a hybrid right now?
Exactly. I think, look, your comment that, you know, real estate has, you know, owning and managing real estate in a major U.S. city, and my expertise is New York City, has always been challenging and difficult, right? I think what's happened in the last 5 years, couple things. One, many more groups entered the market, both as, you know, on the capital side and the operating side. So competitively, I think more groups, multifamily as a category, more groups were seeking, you know, the same deals or fewer deals. Obviously, from a government standpoint and a bureaucracy standpoint, there, you know, are many more rules, regulations, and ultimately headwinds that the real estate community has been and continues to face. And I think, you know, from like the media's perspective, it's been easy, you know, in a rising economy where real estate values have, you know, year by year increase and fundamentals and metrics have improved for the real estate community. It's been easy, I think, for the media to kind of, you know, point fingers or kind of make real estate owners in some situations, kind of make them out to be the bad guys. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I think real estate owners are in a tough spot in terms of like what they do and how they go about doing it. Again, I come from the world where we had institutional partners. So mm-hmm. we were managing real estate to an institutional standard. And so that's kind of how I was brought up in the business. You know, like, you know, and again, there's so many components and so many segments and submarkets. And, you know, it's not like I could, if someone asked me, how's the real estate industry doing? It's a very difficult question to answer. Mm-hmm. I think multifamily, you know, what's been great for New York City multifamily all these years is that the demand factor was off the charts, right? Everyone from around the world wanted to get a job in New York City. They wanted to visit New York City. They wanted to, you know, spend time here. I think if you look in the kind of the last 2 months or, you know, 60 days, 90 days, my family still lives in New York City, my wife and two kids. A lot of people in our circle, extended circles, have been spending time outside the city. And for them, that may be the first time in their lives, not during the summer, that they've been exposed to the suburban lifestyle. And as you can imagine, and I'm sure you have it with people you know, there's a real mental shift going on right now where people are saying, you know, trying to figure out what are their priorities, and how that flows down to multifamily real estate is that demand, you know, that off the chart demand factor may be changing for the first time. And so, you know, the city's always been developed with some type of supply demand perspective. If that kind of grows or, you know, becomes out of whack, that could, you know, have some type of pressure on the fundamentals of the multifamily business here.
Got it. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So with that being said, your new venture, BusyDev, obviously you're based in New York City, and you don't only work with real estate operating companies, you work with technology companies and, you know, various different companies to help them grow their business. So what have you been seeing, and we're recording this during Corona again, a pain point, and we could target the real estate industry if you, sure. You know, for your real estate clients, what have you been seeing them focus on more in terms of trying to reach, you know, certain milestones or revenue goals that maybe they didn't focus on prior to COVID, and now they have some time. What are a few things, and how have you been able to kind of help them, you know, guide in the right direction? Because, you know, as real estate operators, you know, there's so much going on every single day. So how do you kind of get your clients to focus on, you know, their main goal, especially during these challenging times?
Yeah. You know, I would say revenue goals in the short term are kind of not the primary focus. I think it's, you know, there's a lot of triaging and how do I stabilize, you know, not from a regulation standpoint, but, you know, as a multifamily person, but how do I stabilize what I had or the direction it's going? So obviously, when March hit, everyone saw immediate downward pressure, right? Just like, even if you see reported stats on like collection percentages and things, like people felt the immediate change in demand for people looking at their at apartments. If we're talking about multifamily, they saw it with people that were living in their buildings immediately saying, listen, I'm not going to renew my lease if they were in talks or I want to negotiate. Retail businesses being shut down and like the conversations around that. So I think that it's really about like, okay, taking like a perspective on what's going on without really knowing what the future is going to look like, and really looking internally more than externally. I think that was many owner operators' first step. So how do I communicate with my tenants, whether they be residential or commercial? How do we make adjustments to the way that our staff is working in the building? How do we, in theory, create more of a frictionless, touchless environment, right? Mm-hmm. So that was like, I feel like month one, while also then transitioning to, on the capital side, how do I satisfy my, you know, my debt obligations? How do I communicate with my equity partners? Mm-hmm. Because you can't really do that out of the gate until you know what's going on and what you're doing to handle the situation. Obviously those calls are coming in every day, so you can't avoid it. But I'm saying, in terms of the sequence that I think many operators took, is like triage, stabilize, you know, start to kind of communicate to the outside world, like what it is they're doing or what the group's doing. And then it's like, okay, now we've just gone through 60, 70, 80 days of this. What are we going to do going forward? Right. We have an asset. We're not just going to like give back the keys, or we're just not going to give up we've been in business, if it's a family, we've been in business 30, 40 years, we've seen dips in the market, you know, from like, and I'm only 40, but in my career, like, you know, I lived here 9/11/01. Like, I was interviewing for jobs. I saw the impact on the economy then and real estate. You know, then I was working, you know, we were building a business at Stonehenge in 07, 08, at, you know, growing. And then that, you know, happened. And there have been other bumps in the way. So I think it's like on the go forward, you know, I come from a world is how do you, you know, I'm big on smart technology and innovation applied to real estate. Real estate as a category is behind other industries in terms of its innovation. As a general statement. And I think, you know, year by year, you've seen all of this, you know, these new concepts and technologies sprout up that are trying to kind of convince or sway these, you know, we'll call it old school mentality owner managers that they need to do things to relate to their customer better and make the customer journey and the experience more seamless. So that's like where I'm spending a lot of my time today is really on the technology and product side that helps move the needle on the go forward, you know, what happens go forward for all of these real estate owner operators. And there's so many assets, so many buildings, so many ways of approaching it. There's definitely not a one size fits all approach. You kind of got to craft it to, you know, where the group owns real estate, what's, you know, who's their, you know, when did they buy the property? What's the vintage? Who's their tenant base? And then you kind of can craft these different solutions around all of those components.
Yeah, I think that's great, especially like you said, in our business in general, especially when you have generational family office type owners that have done, you know, the same ways operationally and transactionally for the past 30 years and have seen, you know, the downturn. I think this downturn is a little bit different than the previous recession, for sure. I guess another question that I would have for you is how are you kind of, you know, coaching your clients to adapt with the times for, you know, it's definitely easier for, like you said, there's a lot of newer sponsors that are emerging. And to implement technology to help their business be more efficient is probably a little bit easier than, you know, going to 100-year family office that has done the same, you know, right, thing for the past 30 years. How do you get over that more of a knowledge gap to kind of educate? Yeah. Is it just really more about educating and then having them make the decision? Like, how do you?
Yeah. Well, I think real estate as an industry has always been one where a lot of transactions and kind of, you know, we'll call it like someone pounding their chest because of their transactional success has been, you know, that's more of a personal exchange, right? So if you're going out for dinner, if you're speaking to someone on the phone, you're always kind of telling others let's say New York City real estate, what it is you're working on, what you did to your property. And what I think in the world we're in today, where like communication flows so rapidly, is I think, you know, there's so many market leaders today that have embraced technology and innovation, and they're not shy about sharing kind of their forward thinking approach. And so everyone is trying to keep up with the Joneses, and, you know, and I think people, you know, groups are saying we can't, if we look in New York and you say Related, right, they're building a brand new multi-million dollar building. They have, you know, a brilliant team, you know, running the company. They have all these layers. They have all these strategic partners and branded partnerships and everything. We're never going to be like Related, right? If you own a few, 10 story buildings, and yeah, you're successful economically or financially, but what could we do to just maybe, you know, like the surprise and delight factor for our tenants? Is it, do, you know, are things like down to how does our, if it's a doorman building, how do the people, when you walk in the building, communicate with the renters? how are they in this environment being a sounding board, because people are not coming in contact with their neighbors or their friends like they used to? How do we train our staff to really be overly communicative and helpful to the renters? You know, if we're putting signs up in the elevator, let's spend a little extra time and not just put the same sign we put last year for our HVAC, you know, filter cleaning. Let's reference it in context of the world that we're in today. You know, like if you're gonna trust that all tenants are gonna know to put a mask on when they go in an elevator, like I live in a building with 20, 21 floors. Like if the management company doesn't take the leadership to acknowledge that people, the right thing to do is wear a mask, not just when you're outside, but you're in the building. These are your true neighbors, you know, and there's older people that live in my building. And some people are just, you know, not accepting, whether they agree or not, with how things have been handled or they haven't. It's like, you owe it to your neighbors to, you don't know if you're infected with, you know, with COVID. You should be wearing that. So it's like every layer of how you run a building, you can't do everything. You can't do everything overnight. I think it's, you know, as my friend likes to say, it's small wins, you know, and when you do things that are not expected, and that's where the creativity comes in, I think that has a bigger impact than sometimes you do so much that many of those implementations are taken for granted. It's hard to navigate, like, you know, everything that's being offered or that's in front of me as a tenant, or vice versa. If I'm a landlord developer and I have all these things I've done, how do I promote all of them? I, you know, it's almost impossible to do that. So I think there's a middle ground, and it's really just being strategic, you know, having a plan of action, and then really not just doing something to say you did it, but seeing it through. And I always used to say, like, managing down so that the, let's say the team, if you're in a management position, you're managing your team to implement it, but also explaining it up to the leaders of a company, you know, if you report to someone, so that they understand why you're doing things and the level of detail and attention that's going into it, because that's how you create the full cycle on, you know, on improvements.
That makes a lot of sense. So we touched a lot on some sort of innovative and internal communicative and operational inefficiencies that you could turn around and, you know, make more prevalent, especially during these times, to add value to.
You know what, Anthony, I'll give you one example. This is what I was actually going to, I didn't throw it in before.
Sure. But
like right now, right, if you have vacant apartments, right, I think, and you're a renter that has a lease expiring, or you're, for whatever reason, need to move to New York City right now, or to a big city, right? I think that like access control to units, right? So that a renter, potential renter, wants to see the apartment. There's two things he wants, he or she wants. One is they want unimpeded access. So what works for them, not just what works for the landlord. And two is they don't really want to see that unit with anyone else in the space, right? That's mm-hmm. That's like the COVID reality of leasing. So I would say, like, okay, how, if I'm a landlord, what can I do to still maintain my kind of connectivity to the brokerage community, which is so important in a big city, mm-hmm. while also catering to the renters' needs and what they're looking for? So I think, you know, there's a few different technology applications there, but that's where, like, I see that as a future trend, but particularly now. And if people can introduce this into their buildings and portfolio at this stage, it's only going to become, you know, more effective and impactful once things, you know, open up again. So that would be like just an example of how I'm thinking about business development. How do I identify the right groups to work with that have that solution or elements of it? How do I bring it together? And then who do I know in multifamily real estate that may not be thinking about leasing that way, as I see from their website, or I know from other people that have rented apartments or sold apartments, however it works, and kind of connecting the dots and bringing that all together.
Sure. No, that you have to definitely be, that definitely makes a lot of sense. And I've seen it personally on my properties. You got to develop some sort of system during these challenging times. And then, like you said, it's only going to make you stronger as a company moving forward, even once we're out of this. And so you talked a lot, like I said, about, you know, internal inefficiencies and operations. Can you talk a little bit about, I'd love to hear more about your advisement on any creative marketing strategies, whether it's from a branding perspective or a capital raising perspective, or just the ability yep. to show yourself as an operator and to buy new acquisitions to the brokerage community. Can you talk a little, maybe just one or two strategies that you use for some of your clients?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now, LinkedIn, you know, everyone knows it's a tool that they need to be on. I think everyone is trying to figure out and establish their voice. The beauty of LinkedIn is that if I reach out to you or you reach out to me, it's not just an email from a person's name that I have to then back channel or read an entire email or read an attachment. It's like I could immediately see this person is trying to connect with me. This is his background. This is how they frame the communication. I'm big on like less template, like using templates, but then having a template for all the different situations, right? So communication, I still think, has always been the best way to build relationships. And now what's happening is there's just more tools out there. And it's so knowing that there's a tool doesn't mean that if you use it, that it's a win. It's all about how you go about using the tool. And let's look at like from a, you know, investment standpoint in real estate. Microsoft, I always say Microsoft Excel is an unbelievable universal tool that groups use to underwrite real estate, right?
Sure.
How you go about building a model, there are millions or tens of millions or trillions of deviations of how you, and we've all seen a great model versus an okay model. I think if you look at that, which we all understand as real estate people, and you say, okay, how do I take that same mindset for how I would think about an investment and then layer that into my communication, my narratives, my storytelling? I think that's where the massive opportunity is, because the beauty of technology is, you know, you can get to anyone. There, you know, no one's guarding the front door like the old days where you'd have to, you know, convince an assistant or, there wasn't security, but you'd have to like literally canvas a building, go up to the front desk, come up. All of that has kind of gone away. So I'm a big proponent of like communicating, and I'd say the word I like think about when I do it is like, how can you be clever and relevant?
Right.
So, you know, marketing around that as a central point, I think is extremely important. Adding on to that, it's like, how do you stay in touch with people? Right. How do you, you know, just show general interest in a relationship you may have. And it's not just calling them when you have a deal or calling them when you need them for capital or you're in a squeeze. How do you maintain the relationship over time? So when the opportunities do present themselves, the kind of ongoing perspective from the other side is that this is an authentic person and they have in their mind, maybe, you know, you reaching out or someone reaching out, there's no agenda. They truly want to find that middle ground and, you know, like win-win mindset. So that's like one. I mean, in my history within real estate, like, again, let's just use technology. We were always big on, we were kind of one of the first real estate groups in New York to introduce Salesforce as a CRM solution applied to a real estate owner-operator platform. So I think it's like, if you take that, it's like, how do you figure out what's the right hub for you to work off of? I think the mistake in real estate is that too many groups are so reliant on their accounting system and for the accounting system to just decide to add pieces on to the kind of the platform. And then you as a user, like, oh, they do that. Now I have to use such and such because I'm already working with that accounting tool. I think you have to figure out like, what is the best hub to push your business forward. And so if the hub is, you know, is oriented towards marketing or advertising or communications or investor relations or underwriting, whatever it may be, then I think that has to be one of the main determining factor in how you kind of create your technology universe. The good thing is there's so many tools out there that have already been customized for real estate, so you don't have to build everything from scratch. I think it's better to find tools that are kind of halfway or fully built and then modify them for your specific business.
Sure, and that makes a lot of sense, especially for the real estate operators, including myself, who, you know, maybe they have a property management software, and then that property management software starts to add investor relations, but
exactly
that may not be the best fit in terms of, you know, wanting to really scale out and build out that investor relations. It might be better off, like you just said, and in your standpoint, you know, advising your clients to, you know, look for another, you know, software that focuses on that, so you can become, you know, better and not rely on, you know, a software upgrade or, you know, any adaptive changes that you don't have any time frame on. So that's a really,
yeah.
Really
I do think like attention to detail, again, is, you know, people in real estate that grew up, that started their careers as a financial analyst, let's say at a bank or like a, you know, what a private equity firm or whatever other type of institution. I think having, like, if you've been trained by someone that has attention to detail, and I'm fortunate enough to have gone through that training, you know, grinding it out every day, all the work I was doing, how do we try to create perfection? I think that goes a long way, because, like, again, all these tools that exist are all they are. They're a tool. It comes down to how do you apply that tool to the transaction, to the relationship, to your team member, and really owning the detail. If you're a company that's like, listen, I don't care about detail, I'm just happy I own real estate and just keep it like very matter of fact, that's your prerogative. You know, I, again, branding, I think, super important in competitive markets. How do you stand out? And I think it starts with that attention to detail. And even if that's what I'm saying, when you think about, you don't have to do everything, but the things you choose to do, you know, if they're not the right tool and you immediately know that, you know, switch away, pivot off. But I do think that the great business people and leaders out there, you know, the attention to detail reigns supreme.
Awesome. No, and that makes a lot of sense. Jonathan, so we're going to, you know, wind this episode down. And usually I like to ask a couple questions at the end of each show. Number one, sure. It sounds like you have a vast amount of knowledge and experience, and I'm sure you've read quite a few business books. So if you have a favorite business book or a real estate related book, we want to hear what it is.
I always like to say, what's the book I'm reading now? that's the easiest one to remember. So right now I'm reading a book called Give and Take by Adam Grant, who's a famous University of Pennsylvania professor. So for me, I did not go to that university, but I feel like I get a small piece of the level of, you know, education coming out there through this book, which really I think frames people in a very interesting way between those that are, you know, givers and those that are takers. And some people, you know, have a little bit of both, but yeah, great book. Real estate and non-real estate people, I think, would enjoy it.
Awesome. And during your career, do you have a role model that you've been looking up to professionally?
I think real estate is like such a dynamic business, and there's so many things to learn. Like, I don't ever feel like I would, you know, every day I'm learning new things. So I think in different segments, I have people that I always turn to for like investment and operational, you know, thinking. And I have people that understand the tech and the innovation. And I have people that, you know, are, let's say, lawyers that understand risk management. So I think that the beauty of real estate is you meet so many interesting people, and kind of taking a little bit from each of them. That's like, you know, that to me is what makes the future generation of business, and particularly real estate, so interesting, is that the personalities are vast and the stories and the learning that you can gain from all of your experiences are really, you know, off the charts.
Awesome. And last question, what would you like to do for fun, John?
Again, you know, I've been spending a lot of time with my family during the last, you know, 2.5 months. So I have two kids, married. My wife and I just celebrated our 12th anniversary.
Okay.
And I would say, you know, I'm a big sports guy. You know, as I asked you in terms of who you're working with, always played sports, watched sports. The participation I'm doing these days is really more golf and tennis. Mm-hmm. And I like to, so I'd say the two things I love are golfing and really spending time 4 or 5 hours uninterrupted on a golf course with friends, business associates, whatever. Kind of spending time in Central Park, you know, somewhat athletically running, walking, or doing whatever we have to.
Sure. That's awesome. How can people find you, John?
Yeah, so the website's bizydev.com, B-I-Z-Y-D-E-V. It's a play on words with bizdev. Email is john, J-O-N, at bizydev.com. But again, I'm always open to speaking to people where we could kind of figure out how we can collaborate, do business together, form an alliance, and look forward. Hopefully, you know, you continue. I wish you success in your podcast. Hopefully some of what we talked about before the call, you will also, you know, be able to implement to keep, you know, pushing the envelope in the podcast world.
Sure. Thank you so much. So after this conversation, we're going to have Jonathan's information in the comments section of the podcast link and on iTunes. Make sure you subscribe to Discovering Multifamily on iTunes and also give us a fair and honest review as well. It really helps us and, you know, Jonathan in the rankings so we get more exposure. And really appreciate you coming on again, Jonathan. Definitely learned a lot from this conversation and hope the listeners have as well.
Thank you so much and hope to see you soon. Thanks, Anthony.
Thank you.